Now your ideas don't have to wait. Now they have everything they need to come to life. Dell Technologies and Intel are creating technology that loves ideas, loves expanding your business, evolving your passions. We push what technology can do so great ideas can happen right now. Find out how to bring your ideas to life at Dell.com/welcome to now.
This is The Rich Eisen Show.
Hey there, this is Rich Eisen. From my family to yours, happy Thanksgiving.
This is a Rich Eisen best of. In this hour, John Berthold, Phil Pullman. Can you put your own name on a jersey? And now, it's Rich Eisen.
Pleased to have here on The Rich Eisen Show one of the stars of the new film coming out in the theater near you, as well as HBO Max on November the 19th, King Richard. Will Smith plays Richard Williams, the father of Venus and Serena Williams, and the man who plays the role of Rick Macy, one of the more famous tennis coaches in the history of the sport, is John Bernthal here on The Rich Eisen Show. How are you, John?
How you doing, man? I really appreciate you you have me on. And I agree. You know, the Gigolo Show, it is based on your life, man. And that is why I have my picture up on your wall while I was shooting it, man. I was glad. Now that whole thing makes sense.
Wrong, right, wrong, Richard. That's gear you're thinking of, not Eisen. Wrong, Richard.
Right, there you go. There you go.
But I am an officer, though, and a gentleman.
There you go.
Oddly enough. So you're from D.C. Does that mean you root for D.C. teams, John?
I do. And that's not always the easiest thing. I mean, being a football team fan, you know, has definitely been a struggle. I think, you know, right now I'm shooting in Baltimore.
Oh, boy.
So to see sort of like what the Ravens have done and you know, what, you know, to see what Ozzie Newsome did with that team for so long. And it was quite tempting to sort of abandon ship, but I'm one of these guys. I bleed the burgundy and gold. I'm not going to change. And, you know, I came up in, you know, 83 and 84 mm-hmm. and 87 and 92, where we, you know, we won and participated in Super Bowls with different quarterbacks. And I just don't think that's really, it's just not really possible anymore, man.
You spend time in RFK as a kid? Did you ever go?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Those stadiums?
And RFK was a, you know, it's just such a special place to see a game. You know, D.C. is a really interesting city. It's you know, it's like a northeastern city with a very southern vibe, and then you've got Virginia right there, and you know, Maryland. It's all kind of like this conglomeration. But I felt like RFK was sort of the one place where everyone really came together, and the whole stadium rocked. And I miss those days, and I miss that team with all my heart.
So, were you a Nationals guy too? A couple of years ago, when they went on that run, won it all.
Again, I'm not a real bandwagon guy. I mean, I love the Nationals, and I was rooting for them. But you know, when I was a kid, we had the Orioles, so that mm-hmm. you know, it was the days of Brady Anderson and Palmeiro. You know, yes. I grew up an Orioles fan, so.
So you're Brady Anderson at Palmeiro. You're also cursing the umpire Richie Garcia calling the Jeffrey Mayer home run. That's that era is what you're
the
saying,
band,
John.
All that stuff. Yep.
Okay, but you're in Baltimore now. So that's good for you, at least. You know, you're around the Orioles, even though I think you might have won more games playing baseball this year than they did, John. You know, it's entirely possible.
It's really easy to get a ticket, man. So it's super fun to go to the stadium.
It's a beautiful stadium.
I mean?
It really is,
sure is,
Camden Yards. So let's talk about King Richard, because sure. I was on SportsCenter when Richard Williams was saying about his daughters, how terrific they were, and they were going to change mm-hmm. the game. And I remember when Serena first started playing, we're like, okay, she's not going to be as good as Venus. And he says she's going to be better. And we're all like, oh, okay, you have our attention. And then he was right. So what did you learn about this process going through all this, playing the tennis coach, Rick Macy, in this, John?
Look, I mean, I think a lot of people are going to walk into this movie, you know, with a bunch of preconceptions that will prove to be sort of misconceptions. And I think we'll sort of have this narrative about what I think there's something that goes with sort of the overbearing sports parent that we think that's just this enormous amount of pressure, this sort of unwillingness to sort of bend and to make sure, you know, for lack of a better word, just to always be sort of, you know, kind of having, you know, just pushing the kids forward, making sure they reach their goals. I think people are going to be really surprised when they really see sort of what kind of his plan and what his method was. And most of it was really removing the pressure that he puts on his kids and making the game fun for them. I think the movie kind of ultimately is this beautiful sort of meditation on fatherhood and on family and on faith. I think it's I'm really proud of this one. I don't say that all the time with the movies that I'm in. I think what Will does and what these two young women do is staggering. And look, for me, it's a sport. You know, I played sports in college. I grew up playing sports. Never played tennis before, but getting sort of the mindset of you know, a tennis coach. You know, I trained extensively. They let me train my own you know, top 50 junior women's tennis player to sort of like learn the vocabulary of coaching. And you know, I learned a ton about the sport and just how unbelievably mental it is, and I came away having a ton of respect for it, and a ton of respect for the Williams as a family, you know, in a new way. And I think, look, I think raising sort of, you know, one superstar best athlete of all time is miraculous, but doing it twice, yeah, just, I mean, there's like no words for it. And I think you really see sort of you get a front row ticket to sort of seeing what the process was there. And this is not just like sort of a highlight reel of the great moments of the Williams sisters' lives. It's really about the family and how the family kind of got them there and how it was really this collective familial effort. And I think it's pretty beautiful.
So you coached a top 50 player. Is that why Emma Raducanu won the U.S. Open? Because we were wondering how she got that. Was that you, John? Is that you're doing?
Man in the juniors. You know, it was more, look, the guy who made the film, Ronaldo Marcus Green, he's an awesome director. He and I connected immediately. Look, we both play college baseball. Mm-hmm. We both come at this whole thing from athletics. And we really, it's important to us that, you know, you make a movie about a sport, you got to get the sport right. And for me, you know, admittedly, not knowing anything about tennis, I said the only way this is going to work is I got to lose a ton of weight. I got to look like a tennis player. And then I got to really learn the game. And what was really great, what I'm super grateful to him and sort of for Warner Brothers in general for doing, is they didn't only provide me the infrastructure to learn the game, but they let me learn how to train someone. Again, the vocabulary of that, how you train, how you feed, different drills. And, you know, the way that these folks at the Wheel Tennis Center in Ojai, California trained me is they let me actually work with one of their players. And it was great. I got to go see her compete. I got to train her myself. It was awesome. Now I'm taking that on to my youngsters.
So it's Emma Raducanu, right? That's who it was. I mean, just say it, John. It's okay if you coached her up like that. I mean,
I signed an NDA, man.
Okay, very good. All right. So were any of the Williams family around? Like, did Will Smith pick the brains of Richard Williams, and were Serena and Venus any part of this at all?
They were. You know, their sister Isha was on set every single day, and she's a producer, and she was enormously helpful. And that's one of the other things you're going to find out about this family and all of the sisters. They all are extraordinarily talented and successful in their paths. And that was sort of one of Richard Williams's rules. I mean, there was no tennis unless the grades were perfect, and there was no, you had to go to church. You had to do your chores. It wasn't just sort of tennis over everything. It was how is tennis going to serve you, not how are you going to serve tennis. And then Serena and Venus, they were around. They did come to set. You know, I had a wonderful conversation with Serena, you know, right off the jump, just talking about Rick Macy and talking about, you know, I think, look, again, as an athlete, you know, I credit so much of my success and my happiness and my peace of mind to the wonderful coaches that I had coming up. And I was trying to think, you know, what makes a coach great? And I think, you know, Rick Macy, what everyone says about him who played under him sort of to a person, they just made the game fun. Everything was a game. He was larger than life. He always wanted to keep you laughing, always wanted to keep you happy. And, you know, to remember that the game needs to be fun. And Serena said that, you know, her time at Rick Macy's was one of the funnest times of her life. And so I really try to take that to heart.
Yeah, he coached Roddick and Capriati and also Sharapova. So it's, you know, and so did you reach out to him as well? Did you connect
with
him?
Yeah, so we did. We spoke, and, you know, he's got a book and ton of stuff on the internet. He's going to be at the premiere this weekend. I can't wait to shake his hand and meet him in person. But he's real happy with the movie. And look, he's an interesting character, man. He's got his own vocabulary. He's got these things called Macyisms. Let's put a little more mustard on that hot dog and find the slot, rip the shot, that kind of stuff. And he's constantly sort of doesn't mind being kind of the butt of the joke, just as long as that's getting you to play harder. And I really respect that. He's got this pure, pure love for the game. And I think that's why ultimately sort of Richard Williams let him fit into the sort of overall plan and eventually hired him and then moved to Florida to go live on his, and be a part of that academy. And, I think these are two guys that really were used to doing things their way. And, the compromise that Rick sort of had to take in order to work with Richard, I think that calls for some of the most interesting stuff in the film.
Okay. Are you a serve and volley guy, John? Or are you, what are you? Are you like a magician, like Federer?
I just like to let my sheer athleticism, win the day. What I mean?
You grit it out. You got to tough it out. Those five setters, that's how you survive. All right. So this will be great. Again, King Richard, available in theaters on November 19th, also on HBO Max. John, give me right now, please, for everybody here, the best Wolf of Wall Street behind-the-scenes story that you can tell anybody on live television and radio. Please. What do you got for me?
Oh, man, the best.
What do you got
best.
For me? Scorsese, Leo, what do you got for me? Anything? McConaughey, if you're around any of those scenes he was on set?
I think my favorite story, my favorite Wolf of Wall Street story is that whole thing with Sell Me This Pen. That whole thing with the supply and demand and where that came from. Leo was walking to set that day with his security guard, who was a retired New York City detective. And he had turned to Leo and he said, back in the day, I had an interview to work for the real Wolf of Wall Street, for Jordan Belfort. I walked into the interview and all he did is he handed me a pen and said, sell me this pen. So in that scene, Leo just walked in and completely improvised. He just handed me the pen and said, sell me this pen. And the rest of it was improvised. And the thing is, that entire movie was just kind of electric. Working with Scorsese, I mean, I imagine it's like with Belichick, and is it like with any of these guys? It's he's the best of the best. It's the mountaintop, and somehow he's able to literally get the best out of every single person on set. And I think it's a lesson for all of us, no matter what business you're in. He takes the leash off and lets everybody fly. And, I could tell you a story pretty much about every day. Some of those things I probably shouldn't tell you, but there's things I could tell you pretty much about every day on that set that would, it was electric and it was alive, and it's the way film should be made.
All right. Is there something that couldn't make it? Even Scorsese said that's too much. Anything like that? No.
We were really, I'll tell you what, Leo talked to us before that movie was made. And, he's such an unbelievable leader. And, he said to us before we started shooting, he said, look, this kind of movie will not be able to be made in 5 years. This is the last time a movie like this is going to be able to be made. And like he did, he had that foresight. He's like, you just won't. So I am asking you all to push the envelope. Like, just go for it. Whatever depraved, sick thought you have in your mind, go for it. And he's like, that's what this is about. And, he's absolutely right. You couldn't make that movie now. And it's a masterpiece. And so, I mean, look, crazy things happened every day. Some things made it in, some things made it out. It didn't. Mm-hmm. But I can tell you every single day there was, look, a lot of naked bodies, a lot of pretend debauchery, mm-hmm. and a lot of just pushing the envelope. But that's what the movie called for.
That might be the name of our fantasy team. Please write down Chris Brockman. We do this all the time. Pretend debauchery would be a great fantasy team name.
That's pretty good.
Pretend debauchery, and we know what the avatar is. It's John Bernthal and Wolf of Wall Street. That'll be fantastic. There's so many other of your. Credits I could go for right now to ask you about, from Sicario to Baby Driver, Ford versus Ferrari. But John, it's very rare that I have somebody on the show that has a similar credit to me. John, you and I share the fact that we've both been in two episodes of CSI Miami, John.
Ooh.
And
have I been in two? I didn't know that I was in two. Well, I'll take it, man.
Yes, you were in. We looked this up. You were in the episode. You played Harry Klugman, No relation to Jack, I imagine, right?
I don't think so.
Okay. You were in the two episodes called Vengeance and Killer Date. That's what you were in. I was in two episodes. You might have seen them or missed them. Caged and Deep Freeze. I was in both of them. On one episode, I played announcer. And the other one, interestingly enough, I got, I guess, upgraded or more descriptive male announcer. I was in the other one.
Okay, there you go.
But I wasn't helping solve crimes at all. What's your best Caruso story? You got a good one for me? David Caruso?
I didn't really work with him on that show, so I'm going to fail you on that one, man. I really don't, you know? I can't, you know, on those shows, you're either the guy who's lying or you're the guy who says who is lying. You know what I mean? I can't even remember which one I was on that. You know, that was...
You've moved on. You've turned the page from CSI Miami. I haven't.
Hey, man. Hey, look, man. Not at all. I'm real grateful for being on the show, but really do not remember.
What does it mean that I won't ever forget it? What does that mean for me?
It's great, man. It's great. Male announcer. Hey, listen, man. Yes. You know what? Look, the thing you got to go for is, I for me, it was just always about getting a name on that show.
Sure.
I remember my very first role, I was stage manager on One Life to Live, and I do remember that.
Okay.
And my lines were, and in 5, 4, 3, 2, and I pointed at, they didn't even give me one. I had to point it. I stage manager, but, you know, at least I would have appreciated a male stage manager at the time. So
sure.
You do have that, man.
Well, and you could have ad-libbed and gone. You could have said the one, but it was your first gig, and you probably just wanted to stick to the script. I get it.
Don't want to push the envelope.
John, thanks for the call, man. Everybody should go see King Richard in theaters near you and on HBO Max on November 19th, and you've got a ton of upcoming stuff. That American Gigolo that I mentioned prior to you coming on, that is a Richard Gere, the television version of that? Is that what it is, or no?
Loosely, man. Yeah, it's based off that, you know, obviously sort of modernized, and it kind of takes place after the kind of the crime that's committed. As you can imagine, not the best thing to run by the wife and the kids when I told them that was the new gig, but we're still trying to sort that out.
It's work, John. It's work, you know? It's work. Fantastic. And then The Unforgivable, which is going to be on Netflix with Sandra Bullock in December. Come back then. Let's see what the WFT looks like then. We'd love to chat again. John, thanks for the call.
I appreciate it. Thank you for your time, guys. I really appreciate
it. Right back at you. That's John Bernthal, or at Johnny, J-O-N-N-Y Bernthal, on Twitter and Instagram. Right here on The Rich Eisen Show.
This is a Rich Eisen Best Of.
America starts the day with America in the Morning.
First of three pushes of storminess.
Hi, I'm John Trout, your host for the latest news, politics, entertainment, business, and weather.
A speech with political overtones.
Our staff of correspondents provide a fast-paced look at the world with specialized reports from where news happens.
The judge's decision was based on finding there is a likelihood.
So far, the central bank appears to be threading that.
Concise, accurate, and fresh each day.
America in the Morning, the podcast, available wherever you listen.
Our house is a mess. Come on in. I'm Amber Wallen, internet comedian and host of your new favorite podcast, Fly on the Wallen.
Okay, that's pretty presumptuous to assume that this is going to be their favorite podcast, by the way.
Anyway, that wasp that you just heard interrupt me is my husband.
And co-host, Benjamin Wallen.
Listen in as we discuss relationships and keeping our sweet baby kid alive.
Fly on the Wallen, wherever you listen.
This is a Rich Eisen Best Of.
Thrilled to have here in person one of our favorite actors from USA Network's The Sinner, currently in season 4, Wednesdays at 10 Eastern Time on USA Network. Bill Pullman, how are you, sir? Good to see you.
Good to see you, Rich. Good to be here.
You got it. We are, all of us, I don't know if you heard it back in the green room, we named like about half of our favorite film list, and you're in all of them.
Pretty much.
Which one do you get whenever you're around? People walk up to you and give you what? Which film?
I sometimes try to guess because you see a look in their eye that they're coming towards you and they want to talk to you. You know, I go, is this a Casper person or is this a Independence Day person or is it a While You're Sleeping person or is it a Sinner? Now it's like Sinner, you know, because
it's great.
Fortunately, the thing has had a life, you know.
Uh-huh.
But, and I'm always wrong.
You're wrong.
I'm always wrong.
Okay.
Yeah. Lately, I'm surprised of how many international people, like in New York City when I'm walking around, people from all around the world happen to be able to get into the center.
Okay.
So, and they don't even remember or know that I'm in other things in the center.
Come on. Come on.
It's life, Rich. That's the way it is.
But that's great, though, that you got so. So what do you think has been so, connective to your fans about the center? Like, what do you think has worked from
not only a kind of illiterate about sports, as I've told you just before we started, I have my own way into sports, I should say, because I enjoy it, but I don't follow the statistics. And the same is true of television. I'm not the best viewer of all my compadres who are out there working in television.
Sure.
But I just seem to have other things that I can't leave. I do think that the idea of addicting television, people say, I like that show, I'm addicted to it. Mm-hmm. You know, that says something about the power of a season and then another season and another season. And I realize that I finally understand that, and I'm okay with it.
Sure. Okay. Bill Pullman here on the Rich Eisen Show. So you're from Western New York, right?
Yes.
I learned a long time ago in my capacity of the host of NFL Network to not call Buffalo upstate New York, because I'm from Staten Island, New York.
Yes.
To call Buffalo upstate New York, I was told by many Bills fans that work around NFL Network that that's a slight, and I apologize.
Because they like Western New York.
It's you're Western. You're not upstate. You're Western New York. So did you grow up around the Bills? Like, was that a team that was like forefront of your life out there?
Yeah, but and that's why it's not called Antelope. The city is called Buffalo. It is Western in its own way.
Sure.
But I know what you mean about the nature of the Bills and their connection to all of that area of New York State is so important, I think, because they have an identity complex. We get forgotten out there by the Albany. That's really east and Hudson Valley, all that stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
And a lot of people, if you say you're from New York, they'll immediately say, well, I don't hear your accent. In Western New York State, it's practically Ohio.
Right.
That people sound like Ohio.
Right.
They have country accents and things like that. So the Bills, bring you together, barbecue wings.
Sure.
And watching the Bills is a cultural thing.
You never tailgated? You never jumped off an RV into a flaming table like the rest of the Bills fans? Bill Pullman, you've never done that?
How serious they are. They got it. I like the apparel.
Yeah.
I think the Buffalo signature.
It is pretty cool. No, I know. I get it.
And it had a dark, I like the underdog thing. I mean, that was such a long stretch where they didn't win.
Exactly right. I know.
Record breaking, right? How many do you know offhand?
It was 25 years until last year, Bill Pullman,
that
the Buffalo Bills had not made the playoffs after that string of going to the Super Bowl 4 straight years and not winning and what have you. And I just loved when they Bills got off the plane to, make the AFC Championship game and then lose it. And then the fans all showed up at the airport and went totally crazy. They are really passionate. I remember going into my first tailgate at a Buffalo Bills game, covering it for NFL Network. I'm like, oh God, there's about 3 bonfires here. I'm like, oh God, this is lit, literally and figuratively.
It's
so cool. I love it. Bill Pullman here on the Rich Eisen Show. Okay, Bill, we have first things first. You said that you could tell which person, which fan approaches you, what their favorite part of your filmography is. Can you want to try that with me? Because I know I've mentioned a couple films already, but you want to give it a whirl? Just look at me and see what I am?
I did overhear The Last Seduction as you gave it a thumbs up.
And I thought, big time.
That's always good when someone goes for the noir and,
I went the other direction. Not your big pop tentpole films, correct?
Yes.
But that is not the one. The one for me is Spaceballs.
Oh.
For real. Because I am a Mel Brooks junkie.
That
when it comes down to it, High Anxiety, Young Frankenstein, obviously, the producers, Blazing Saddles. Mel Brooks is one of my favorites of all time. What was that like working with him?
Wow. You know, did you see it first on screen or on VHS?
I saw it on screen.
On screen?
I did. Oh, I went to the movie theater.
It was 85, and yeah. You would have been like 15 or 14?
No,
or
I was, bless you, 13. For that, actually. No, I was just about to go to college. I was 18. Yeah. I was about 17 years old.
That's like straight heroin, no cut.
Yes, for a Mel Brooks, you know, Jewish kid from New York who grew up loving Mel Brooks, man. It was just like, okay, Mel Brooks meets Star Wars, I am all the way in. I am.
Well,
in.
You know, my I always loved, and I do love that Jewish side of him because it's old. You know, it's old vaudeville. It's old
your show Borscht shows. Belt. That's
you know,
what it was. I mean, yeah, like really. Sid Caesar. I mean, you got to be way back in the day, man.
Just so. Yeah, genetically, it's in him all the way. And you know, my wife is Jewish, and my father-in-law Al Hurwitz, you know, is always has a certain sense of humor. But Mel used to come up to me and goes, Pullman, you guys.
You guys, that's what he said.
You have such good hair. I mean, I got hair. It's like Brillo. And you got such good hair. You know, and he touched me, you know. It's affection in a weird, wild way.
It's good to be the king. You know, kind of good to be the king. Oh, my God.
What a genius. I mean, this, and I always think about him with Spaceballs in terms of the power nap. Because he would be, you know, he just would say, I'm just going to go down for about 5 minutes. And he'd come up and 1,000 things had occurred to him.
Are you serious?
Yeah.
Like he would just tap out and say, I need just a power nap. And then he would come back and then...
Yeah, he said, we need to change that line. It needs to be not orange, but purple. Mm-hmm. Purple's funnier. Mm-hmm. You know, stuff like that, which sounded like wisdom to me.
It sounds like, well, I mean, you would know which color is funnier. Well, yeah. We have a bunch of questions from your career here in Celebrity True or False, where these are from articles that have been written about you or from bios that have been placed online about you, and we need to know what's true and what's false, if you don't mind. Okay, and we have production value on top of it. Bill Pullman live here in the Rich Eisen Show studio. Roll it, please. Roll it.
Celebrity True or False.
You can't handle the truth.
All right, it's that simple. That's the setup. That's the setup,
that's
Bill.
That's the setup.
That's all we got. We have no fireworks.
Did he say you can't handle the truth?
That's it right there.
I believe in that.
Okay, here we go. So, true or false, Bill Pullman, when promoting Independence Day in South America, some people actually thought you were the real president of the United States. Is that true or false?
Well, I think that they hadn't seen the movie yet. And they were told that I was the president of the United States.
Uh-huh.
You know, if you lose the word in the movie, mm-hmm. you know, or those words, it just becomes you're the president of the United States. And it kicked in some really interesting things. And probably the most bizarre was they had kind of cigarette girls that were with little pillbox hats
sure.
and short skirts mm-hmm. and everything. And they walked down the red carpet with me.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I got that because I didn't know that presidents get that. I thought that's a good deal. And I think it was because they thought I was the president. I don't know, maybe. But yeah, there was that feeling. It was a good period. And then after people saw the movie, they realized, right. You're not the real president.
Is it true that that scene with you with the bullhorn and rallying the troops to fight the aliens, that was one take, one and done?
No, that's not true.
That's not true.
Not true. Yeah, I never heard that.
That's
out there.
Is that exactly what we were talking
about?
Yeah,
Bill, we've heard that you were just so into it and everyone was just so caught up in the moment of the speech that it was one take and they just had to reshoot kind of people's reactions.
Oh, man. Well, we did have to go fast. And it was late in the, it was early morning when we did it, you know, mm-hmm. it was like 3 or 4 in the morning or something.
Yeah.
But, you know, when you're dealing with a director like Roland Emmerich, you got masters, you got, you know, all that. I think what was really improvisational about it was kept, you know, and I realized that they probably used those early takes because like when the microphone didn't work and I had to kind of tap it uh-huh. and everything, that was kind of real.
Okay.
Yeah. So that was all, you know, happening. But I think I had a few whacks at it. You know, you have to be ready to sustain. I love the mythology of I did it in one take.
Yes, sir. Well, I like to refer to as one take Richie. That's the way I refer to myself sometimes on this show. Right. Why not? So that is the mythology of it, I guess. And so for is it also true that you're asked as Bill Pullman to be the president of the United States again and that voice and just do all sorts of crazy stuff? Is that true as well? You're asked to that all the time.
Buried in people, but then you realize maybe they want me to go, I don't need to do that, but do you know the speech? And then they'll perform the whole speech for you.
Is that right?
Yeah. I've had that probably 10 times, you know, where I've actually said, do you know? I had some inkling, you know, and yeah, I had to do it for my, and they were hoping that I would get to see them do it, you mm-hmm. know, which is, I like that better than me having to. You want me to do the speech
yes,
now?
Because it's that good.
Am I a dog with a bone?
It's that good. It is that good. Yeah, you know, like you rallied the troops against the aliens. You saved the planet.
That's right.
I mean, do you want me to do it right now? I mean,
I can do it right now.
Can you really do it right now?
I have the text.
No. That's not the same. You can't Google it with Bill Pullman sitting here,
Chris. It's too late. I've already.
All right. Here's the next one. True or false, Bill Pullman, you still have the jacket you wore in while you were sleeping. Is that true or false?
That is true.
Where's the jacket?
It would imply it's not that. Is it that jacket?
It's
a reversible jacket, and it has denim on one side and a kind of a tan on the other. So I don't want you to get the feeling, Rich, that I have a lot of stuff from my movies in my house.
That's okay.
That would be a little weird. But I do have probably more than a normal person does. But I do. For some reason, I was always digging the reversible idea. You know, of jackets and clothes and stuff. It's gone out of fashion, I think.
So you kept it not for some sort of, I guess, memento keepsake, but you kind of like the
jacket. It's in the closet. Nobody sees me wearing it and goes, is that from what? What?
So you stole
never
it.
Catch on.
You stole it while wardrobe was sleeping, or they knew that you took it?
That's right.
What was it?
Disney was a little more free with them, with their goods in those days. You know, it was Buena Vista, which owned by Disney, I guess. But it was
right.
Yeah, I made off with it, which was really good. I did. You know, Turtletaub is. I love that you are friends with him.
Yes,
he's one of the great people and directors.
I agree. And just my wife, when I told her you were going to be on this show, that's the first movie that blurted out of her mouth. She will watch. That's a rewatchable for her.
Yeah.
All the time. I've seen that movie a lot on the TV. I'm like, again? You know, like that's that's what happens in my house a lot.
I wonder if John watches it again.
I think if John's wondering anything, he's where the hell did that reversible jacket go?
I know.
I wanted it for national treasure, and we couldn't use it because, you know, it's pretty cool, man. Are you surprised about the staying power of that film for you? Bill?
Yeah, that was really not, you know, I think even John said it on the last day of the shoot, you know, he said, I don't know whether anybody's ever going to see, this movie goes away, you know, but I want to say that it's been really significant for me and this experience has been significant for me and I appreciate that we had this time together. And so, you know, I think that was... I think it was largely his contribution. I remember a few people out of sight of their mouth said, "This is a TV script," you know, that it was somehow too pleasant, you know, too friendly in some way.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't think they realize there's something in the DNA of it that is classic, you know, and definitely that Sandy is so fantastic, and I'm so lucky to get paired with Jack Warden and you know.
Oh,
all
sure,
these,
Peter Boyle.
Peter. Boyle.
I mean, speaking of young Frankenstein, I mean, that's young Frankenstein. That's Peter Boyle.
Yeah.
Sure.
I went on to do a couple movies with him. Yeah. Just so great. And so graceful and all those guys were. And so I always think of them as my ancestors in a
that's
way.
Pretty cool, man. A couple of Spaceballs questions. True or false, it was rumored that Mel Brooks wanted you and Daphne Zuniga to get back together and do a sequel. Is that true?
Well, you know, he put it in the movie. You know, this is for Spaceballs 2, The Search for More Money.
I forgot about that. So
he's, you know, that's deep philosophy, you know, that right. Let's name it. We need more money. But I think, yeah, it would certainly be great. But I think, it's hard without candy and,
Of course. And that was the other question. Is it true that he ad-libbed his famous line of "That's going to leave a mark"? Is that true?
That's going to leave a mark.
Yeah. Yeah. Was that, did he ad-lib that or was that in the script?
Yeah.
I mean, come on.
Yeah.
I use that still today. My friends and I still use that.
But
today.
It's a quintessential John Candy. It's so off the cuff. Mm-hmm. It's so gentle humor. You know, it's not banging over your head. It's just like, and he was a special, he danced with comedy as just the lightest, graceful thing.
A sweetheart, right? I never obviously was ever around him. What was that like to be around him?
Yeah, it was just it was my second movie and he saw me as a guy in need and he took me under his wing.
What do you mean?
Well, it was on the lot of the MGM lot, one of the last movies that was made on that lot when it was still MGM, and busy, and I was off the farm practically in his eyes. He saw that. Mm-hmm. But he would he'd say, "Come on, you want to have lunch in my trailer?" And things like that. And mm-hmm. Are you happy? What's going on? So he looked out for me.
That's so cool. And you got that gig out of Ruthless People, right? Is that how it worked? You were Ruthless People, and then
Mal said he tried to get a Tom Hanks, Tom Cruise, and he couldn't get a Tom, so he got a Bill. Which I think always amused him. In other words, you're from nowhere, man. And I was really from nowhere. Right. And he and Anne Bancroft came down to see me in a play. Mm-hmm. They saw me in this weird, abstract Barabbas, this medieval passion play kind of thing. Mm-hmm. They had a lot to say about it, And, yeah, it was really a special thing that he yanked me out of the farm league.
No kidding.
See, I know a little about sports.
Come on, Bill. Come on. you know what you know, man. And again, we know you're in The Sinner tonight, 10 Eastern time on USA Network, currently in season 4. Like I said, we're huge fans of yours, man. And thanks for coming in here. Well, really appreciate that.
Really great to be on your show.
Thank you so much for saying that. And I know, Chris, you want to do one line. I know you do. Like, you're desperate to do one line.
Now I switched over and I started doing Spaceball lines in my head because I could quote that movie beginning to end. Like, "On this ship, you refer to me as, hey, idiot, not yo, captain."
Okay,
like,
there you go.
You got the lines backwards. It's just like, give me paw. Ow, 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 ow. Like, to do with my brother and sister growing up. I just love that.
Do you get that a lot, or that's a first for you right there? Give me paw.
No, give me paw. I still remember, that was also, because that was early for green screen, and we were doing in the Winnebago, and there's green screen. We had to wear sunglasses in between the takes, and he improvised that when we were in between a take. So he was not only saying "give me paw," but he had sunglasses on when he did it, and I thought that was cool. Can we keep the sunglasses? But no, we
had God.
Pizza the Hut and like.
Well, Darth Helmet. I mean,
we're not just doing this for money. We're doing it for a bleep load of money.
Love it. That's it. That's it. See, I told you we're fans. We're not just saying it. We're not just saying it. Thanks again for coming here, man. This has been great. Bill Pullman, everybody, right here on The Rich Eisen Show. Everyone, check out The Sinner again tonight and every Wednesday, 10 Eastern time on USA Network.
This is a Rich Eisen Best Of. This is a Rich Eisen Best Of.
You, Brockman, pointed something out to me today that Jason Feller, who we're talking about for the moment as if he's not sitting directly to your left, he is wearing, Jason, you're wearing like a Raiders, what is this, some sort of like...
Raiders pullover.
One of those baseball practice jerseys.
Practice jersey.
Yeah.
This looks old school. Like, how old is this that you got here?
I ordered it not long ago.
Oh, okay. Because it looks old school. All right. Now, what's Silver your problem? Black. What's your problem, Chris?
Okay, so it's in general, you know, like, I'm not big a fan of, you know, wearing a jersey of the two teams that aren't playing, but, like, where do we come out on getting a jersey of your team but putting your name on the back?
Your name on the back.
Yeah, so, like, I order a Red Sox or a Patriots jersey, and I put Brockman on the back.
Well, you couldn't put a name on the back for the Red Sox. It would have to be an away jersey.
That'd be
for
a Fugazi
that, right?
Red Sox
jersey.
What I mean,
jersey. Just like, what are we thumbs up or thumbs down on your own name on a jersey?
I'm thumbs up on
that. That you wear to
thumbs
games.
Up.
Well, how about this? I'm thumbs up on your own name.
Okay.
But not when it's totally botched, like it's on the
so
back.
So this
of,
guy right here got this.
Turn around, Jason.
Raiders jersey, and his name is spelled wrong.
It says Jay
Felt.
Now
it's supposed to be Jay Felly, which is my
Jay Felly. Okay, so it's instead of Jay Feller, it's supposed to say Jay Felly, and it says Jay Felt, F-E-L-L-T.
Now, did you
I waited
typo?
6 weeks for this.
Did you typo or
Jay
did they
Felt's
typo?
Annoyed when he opened it. I'll say
now,
that.
But Jay Felt, why don't you return it? Why don't we get this right? Or is it now better that it's Jay Felt?
I'm starting to like it. I mean,
but why also Jay Felly? Now, how about this? I have
his,
a problem if you're
name.
Putting your nickname on there.
Yeah,
nickname.
Yeah, it's a nickname.
Nickname.
You have a problem with putting your own name on the back of a jersey?
I think it's kind of just hacky. Like, you don't play for the team. Why are you getting a jersey with your name on it?
Oh, my God.
You don't play for the team, but you root for the team. You're, like, part of the team. That's
not,
what fandom is.
You're not part of the team. They don't pay you. Pay them.
But you always refer to, like, the Patriots as we're going to do this. We're going to do that. We're gonna kill you. We're like,
yeah, because,
that's the way,
because so you're then, diehard, but you don't play for them.
Well, I know
when,
that.
When they win a championship, you don't get a ring
so
in the
there's
mail.
No... Brockman, there's no Brock Shady jerseys anywhere.
Absolutely not. That is insane.
That is, I think your thought process is
you know
insane.
How so you feel that you're not, you what? Can't, you can't wear a jersey of somebody who's younger than you.
Yeah, I think you're both wrong on that. As someone who's probably you know the mean? King of jerseys in this room, I think you're both way off on that.
Jay Felt, you're wrong.
Interesting. So we're our terrestrial radio audience. We welcome you back here at the Rich Eisen Show. We just spent the last couple minutes on Peacock and on Sirius XM talking about how Jason Feller, a.k.a. on Instagram, Jay Felly, okay, has got his Raiders practice jersey or practice, like, warm-up jersey on, and you wanted a number 20. Is there a specific reason?
Well, tell him, Jay.
Yeah,
let him know.
My hockey number, and it's recently vacant, so.
Well, tell him why.
Used to be Arnett. He's not there anymore, so.
Oh, okay. Damon Arnett used to be 20. Okay. So we're glad that let's just put it this way. I'm glad that I'm not seeing at Jay Felly any of similar videos. So you wanted to be at Jayfelly.
Correct.
Because you're Jason Feller.
Correct.
And they came back. Who's they? Who's the offending party here? Let's call them out. Let's call them out right now.
I ordered it off an Instagram site.
Now that's your problem.
It wasn't even
you
like
gotta go official. You gotta go go official because that's how somebody didn't puts Jay Felt.
It was
on
the
F-E-L-L-T.
It was the day after my surgery.
Yeah, he was
so
still hopped up on.
It was still a lot of morphine going through me. And
maybe so the same person was hopped up on morphine with the hot press. You know,
but see, we're trying
putting a T there when it's a Y. Like so, they saw the Y and they put down the T and just shipped it off to you, and you're fine with it. You're gonna walk around with a Jay Felt.
Well, I tell you, Rich. Now we're trying to turn the negative into a positive now with him. So we're going to try to come up with ways for him to use it, like give him a podcast, and you're going to now know how Jay Felt.
Yeah, how did Jay
Felt? Stuff like that.
Yeah, I'm not going to do that.
How do you? Is it better than Ask Del Tufo, like Jay Felt or Ask Del Tufo?
Well, I think we should give Jay a segment just to make Del Tufo jealous because of all the time that he's missing doing work for other people.
I do love that.
So well, if we give him the weather, then look out.
I told Feller, he's kind of like, you know, when you got a knuckleball or a specialist pitcher in baseball.
Changing
you got your
speeds.
Own camera.
Yeah.
Your own catcher that,
you
know, I'm a knuckleballer. Yeah. He's like my own special grab bag catcher because he's here every Friday.
Okay, so very good.
We've kind of got, I'm like Charlie Huff or Phil Negro when he's.
What's in the box?
Very good. Well, that's coming up. That's coming up shortly. TJ's big ass grab bag. But your problem is anybody who puts their own name,
super
customizing
weird.
Their own name on the back of a professional sports jersey.
I think if you have a name,
what's
of
your
a
problem?
Player,
why do you care?
It's so it's weird. Why? You don't play for the team.
But so Chris, what? It's a way for you to feel that way. You're a diehard fan. You're part of the team.
So get the jersey of your favorite player.
But Chris, here's the deal, right? You spend $250 for an authentic NFL football jersey, right? And you get Joe Schmo on the back, and then you're a fan of this team, and then 3 years later, Joe Schmo's gone. Now you're stuck with a Joe Schmo jersey when you could have spent that $250, got your own name on there, and then you have it forever because you're a lifelong fan. That's just one way to look at it.
That's weird. You know what else is super weird?
How's that?
Seahawks fans who get the 12 and it says fan on the back, get over yourself.
Well, that makes it look like, you know what it says? That I have a problem with, because now what that looks like is it just came like the default. Like it's like, It's like you buy a frame and you keep the fake picture in it.
And you put it up in your house.
And you put it up in your house. Yeah. Right? It's just like, it says fan. Like, come on. Let's step the game up there. Like, I get it's 12. Why is it 12? Is your favorite player 12? No, it's like, where are the 12s? I totally get that. Yeah. But it just says fan on the back. You got to, just switch it up a little bit. But I don't have a problem with the name. Again, I have a problem with somebody who's like 60, 70 years old going to a game of somebody who's 21. Like, honestly, like whatever Jet fan, like, oh, I'm rooting for some 60-year-old, firefighter out there in New Jersey.
As a wearing Mike White jersey?
A Zach Wilson jersey. Oh. Like, literally, the guy needs to be carded. That's our problem. Like, but if he wears a Namath jersey, all good, man.
I think it's cool, actually, like Jefferson. So if there was a Jefferson on the Cowboys, you get a Jefferson jersey. That's cool because you're kind of double there dipping go. There. Like, that's neat.
There's not, but,
Do you have you put your name on the back of a jersey?
Yeah, surprisingly, I didn't make this. Uh-huh. Back in the day, I used to have connections with, like, Reebok and stuff. And so someone that worked there was a friend of mine and got me a Steelers authentic jersey. Yeah. It said Jefferson on the back. I didn't make it myself, though, like I said.
Oh, okay.
But, yeah.
That's just – now, this is a jersey guy.
He's a jersey guy.
Okay.
Big time.
He loves his jerseys. And he doesn't put his name on the back of it. And he has many different teams that he could do that with because he roots for an insane number of teams.
Oh, my God.
So that's one reason why I think you could be wrong here, Chris.
This is a Rich Eisen best of.